Welcome to the upstreamlife.com. I'm your founder and editor, Vishal Krishna. I like talking geopolitics, I like talking history, but sometimes I don't understand the budget because I'm not a man of finance. But so I've got you a finance expert. I've got you one of the partners from BCL India. This is Mr. Pawan Sharma. He's been obviously advising my company, but also he's advising many companies, some of them unicorns. He's advised them in finance, but today is about the interim budget 2024. And the world is looking at India. Our stock markets are soaring. Our youth are exuberant. But we need to put context to what's going to happen in the next few months and years to come. And the budgets are very important to look at what the country is earning, what it's spending. So Pawan, so what? Why is the interim budget important or not important?
1st February is the date we all look forward to.
Always. I've been doing that for 20 years.
Yes. I've been doing it since I entered practice.
So. Okay.
Interim budgets, of course, not a lot of excitement because it's a formality. We will see a lot more excitement sometime in June, July.
Okay.
That's when we'll have to do another session, hopefully.
We will.
Right. So interim budget, it's the government's proposal for the next few months. They have a vision for the next year, but they also seek permission from the parliament
to have a smooth running
of the government for the next few months till the elections, and post that, of course, you'll have a full budget.
But this budget only encapsulates the 10 years of this
Absolutely.
Particular national government, the BJP run government. You will enjoy it from that context, and it matters to you startups, you MSMEs, and you salaried people. We were all once salaried. This man got me to start up. That's another story for another podcast. So thank you. Enjoy it. Pawan, thank you for doing this podcast with me simply because budgets are very important for us to discuss. And you've analyzed the budget with me in the past in my previous avatars as a journalist. Firstly, a little caveat here. Pawan's also my advisor. And his firm, BCL India, advises me. He's a partner there. And the reason I'm bringing Pawan onto the show is because he understands finance and he understands the macroeconomic trends that impact businesses. His company advises over 200 people. 200 companies, let me put it that way.
And people too.
And people too. Yes, you have a lot of people. I'm going to choose my words carefully because you're the expert. And as a journalist who's covered budgets over the last 18, 19 years, we've always covered the optics. We've always covered whether it's a budget that's good for businesses or is it good for farmers. But what I have realized is budgets are now mostly about how India is going to be setting its path towards the future. But in simplistic terms, it's about revenue and expenditure.
Yes.
Right? And
it's
an interim budget. If there are kids watching this, what is an interim budget? Quickly, and then we'll go into the larger aspects of the current budget.
Sure. First of all, thank you so much for that kind introduction. I hope I do justice to those terms that you've used, and I have fond memories of our previous interviews. As far as the interim budget itself is concerned, think of it as a short-term or a temporary budget. And it is because this is the election year, and during the election year and after the election is complete, you have a full budget, you know, like any budget which is during a non-election year. So the interim budget, basically, we call it a vote on account, allows the government to function smoothly. Governments have traditionally stayed away from big bang announcements. Maybe 2019 was, to some extent, an exception because the major announcement, which is the prime minister, there was a farmer benefit that was announced. And 6,000 rupees that was given to farmers, small farmers directly. That was a major announcement in 2019. But this budget, the finance minister stayed away from certain big bang announcements. Traditionally, that's been so. So think of it as a temporary budget to allow the government to function. And there are certain tax dates. You know, for example, there are certain sections which are linked to dates. So the tax changes that we would see in the interim budget is to extend those dates so that the companies are not affected.
Okay. Now, getting into the budget by itself, let's look at our ecosystem of stakeholders. Let's start there. Small and medium businesses. And let's add startups. Any announcements for them that's interesting?
Nothing. So the government has, at least the finance minister is very clear, saying that there are no tax changes, keeping in mind the tradition that interim budgets will not have massive changes in the tax laws. Of course, we expect once the government is fully formed, we would know what is the change, you know, what is the proposal at that point of time. For now, no changes in the tax laws. Tax rates continue to remain what they were earlier. Startups, the benefit, the one of the tax benefits they get is under a section called ATISE.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an expiry date, 31st of March 24, that's been extended to 25.
Which is a good thing.
Absolutely. It is more of a formality. Mm-hmm. These dates naturally have to be extended because these are sections for the benefit of startups. Mm-hmm. And that's what the interim budget does, right? It extends these timelines so that companies don't suffer, businesses don't suffer.
Okay. And for the MSMEs, up to 250 crore, the tax rates remain the same?
400 crores,
yes, okay.
They remain the same. Mm-hmm. No change in the tax rates. So corporate tax rates have become far more complex over the last few years. So you have different slabs or different groups under which these companies fall. You have companies up to 400 crores who can avail the 25% tax rate. Beyond 400 crore, the tax rate goes up to 30%. You have certain specific sections that companies can take benefit of, where the tax rate goes down from 25 to 22. They've complicated the matter by bringing in a compulsory surcharge and cess so that 22 becomes 25.17, become quite complex. Our lives are miserable. So, but yeah, corporate tax rates compared to last year and this year, no change.
No change. So that way they don't have to worry about coming and saying that do they have to meet the new surcharges, nothing.
Nothing of that sort.
Okay.
We'll have to wait and see during the full budget.
That'll be around July, yes. Okay. In terms of the corporate world in India, I mean, I was watching a couple of interviews by CII in the morning, and they were saying that India needs a stable corporate tax, just like the U.S. U.S. is very, it's highly taxed, according to me, but some countries like Singapore. But there were also arguments saying that, we have to separate super rich tax versus company tax, and India is traditionally known to protect the poor. Right, there's an argument between the three that the tax system in India is actually good and that the poor need to be protected. How do you look at it when you work with different IHNIs, you also work with big companies? How do you separate these three things that I've just told you about?
So taxes, at least in India, we call them the progressive tax system, where the higher you earn, the higher tax rate you fall under, and that's the more tax you pay, basically. Mm. And that's where the concept of surcharge comes into play, where you earn more, you pay more surcharge. Surcharge, think of it as an additional tax. Your tax effective tax rate basically increases. So the higher a person earns, the more the tax the person pays. But of course, for companies, for firms, you have flat tax rates, which is similar to Singapore. Like you mentioned, Singapore has a flat tax rate for companies. India also has a flat tax rate for companies. But like I mentioned, they fall under different groups. But what normally happens in these discussions is the focus is on direct tax or income tax. What we must also consider is indirect tax. Indirect tax is GST, goods and services tax. And indirect tax does not differentiate between the rich and poor.
Yes.
Right? It is a consumption tax. I consume a certain commodity or a service. I'll end up paying tax on that product or service irrespective of what my income levels are. So we need to consider both aspects. So any country in the world would want to protect its poor, but GST is more pervasive that way. Right? Whether you're rich or poor, doesn't matter. You'll end up paying tax. But of course, in India, you also have what we call compensation cess. You have a higher tax slab, which is tax rate applicable to luxury goods. That differentiation is done, which is also why GST is special in India. You have varying tax rates. The main purpose is to protect, people who are in the lower or middle income groups.
Okay.
So to summarize, direct tax should not be the only perspective. You should look at both direct and indirect.
Mm-hmm.
And in indirect also, I think the Indian government has done a good job, trying to protect the poor to whatever extent it is possible. But everybody pays tax.
Okay. Remember last year there were narratives about a certain entrepreneur who went out and said, in India, an individual pays the highest taxes that, if you look at even income tax, direct taxes, and with a combination of indirect tax, you're only earning, if you're earning under 2 rupees, 50% goes off in taxes. How far would that be a correct statement according to you?
Close to 50%. If you look at the highest tax slab with all the surcharges and cess, it will be close to 42%, that high net worth individual will be paying. But I believe the issue arises from the point of view of what is the service or what is the benefit that the individual gets by paying that high tax, right? If you look at some of the European countries and the benefits that their citizens get, it is commensurate at least with the tax. I don't think so. There's an argument. I'm paying a lot of tax, but yes, I'm also getting benefits. maybe in India there is a disparity. Yes. So when you look at local infrastructure,
education,
healthcare. In addition to the tax, you're also paying to procure these services to the private sector, which is where the angst, you know, comes into play, right?
And things are expensive.
Things are expensive, right? And the people say that I'm also paying tax. I'm also paying for services that I'll have to procure privately because maybe the government infrastructure isn't that good. Of course, it's their choice, you know, where they would want to send their kids to school or get themselves treated. But I think that is the primary cause of concern. You know, what is it that you're getting in return? If the level of or quality of services matches the taxes that are being paid, and I think the government is also working in that direction where they would want to improve services to taxpayers.
Okay.
The finance minister did make that statement that we want to improve the quality of service that the government gives to taxpayers, at least high net worth individuals. If the quality improves, maybe they will not move out of India.
That's super interesting for me in terms of ideas alone. So you're saying we are doing a good job of protecting the poor, and with digital payments and everything, we're trying to uplift the poor, including subsidies, because we are also a nation known for subsidies, right? Farm subsidies especially. And you're saying it is progressive, corporate tax and a combination of all this and inflation put together. You're saying that our tax regime is progressive.
I think that's the best that we could have done. Right? Mm-hmm. Traditionally, it's the best that we could have done. The other fact is that we do not have a lot of money to play with. Maybe we can get into the fiscal deficits.
Yes.
We can get into that conversation post.
I wanted to talk about that.
The fact is we don't have a lot of money to play with. If you don't have a lot of money to play with, your hands are tied when it comes to tax policies. You cannot give away a lot of benefits because then it hits you in other ways.
Okay, I want to talk, since you brought in fiscal deficit, I have some numbers, if you can clarify that for our audience and how it impacts their lives. Let's not just say numbers and let's get deeper into how it impacts them, for example. Let's start with fiscal deficit. You know, last year the estimates were around 5.8%, you know, and now it's about 5.1%. What does that mean?
So look at fiscal deficit as the excess of government spending over its revenues.
Yes, right? Absolutely.
It's like your personal budget or like a company's budget, right? You're spending more than what you're receiving or earning. And that, of course, needs to be funded.
Yes.
And the funding comes from borrowings. Right? So the gap between expenditure and receipts is met through borrowings. And that the deficit, so to say, right, the excess of expenditure over borrowings is what we call fiscal deficit.
Absolutely.
The 5.8 and 5.1 numbers are fiscal deficits expressed as a percentage of our GDP. Ideally, this number should keep dropping, and that is what the government refers to when they say fiscal responsibility. They have a roadmap where this 5.1 should become 4.9. They want to bring it below 5. COVID caused a lot of issues.
Distress, yes.
And which is why the governments across the world were forced to spend more.
You were right, because U.S. inflation is so bad.
Correct.
It's probably because of printing the money.
Printing money,
yes.
Printing money, borrowing a lot of money, because ultimately you need to pump money into the system, right? So maybe these COVID years were the anomalies, and hopefully in the coming years we should see a tapering down of the fiscal deficit.
You advise a lot of MSMEs. I mean, they were the ones who were rapidly hit during the COVID. Do you see that coming back? Because that's not yet recovered. I see industrial output growing in India, actually.
Yes.
Because people are talking about China plus one kind of strategy, and a lot of money is flowing in.
Correct.
But FDI is largest in probably Gujarat, Karnataka, and one more state. I think Maharashtra or something of that sort.
Tamil Nadu also.
Let's put it that way. And actually, I think FDI should flow to all parts of India. Does this have a bearing on the MSME performance at this point of time, that they will recover or will it take
MSMEs
time?
I think MSMEs are recovering.
Okay.
We are seeing those changes. Businesses, at least the MSMEs that we are working with, we are seeing them progress.
And what industry would they be in? Manufacturing?
I think all industries. Of course, manufacturing, infra, you know, energy. We are seeing a lot of positive change, right? Even services, for example.
Right.
Even if you look at tourism, if you look at hotels, if you look at professional services, you're seeing an uptick. Maybe it's because of the base effect. You had a slump, 2021, 2022, and now you're seeing the recovery. But despite the base effect, there is certainly a positive change, which we can see. It's palpable. We know that there is a change.
Okay.
And that's across MSMEs, right? And
That's interesting, Pawan. I really want to ask you this in terms of, is India very Keynesian today? Because we are spending a lot on infrastructure. If you look at the budget, interim budget itself, we're spending so much on infrastructure. Logistics, supply chain is the key that they discuss. They've been discussing this for the last three budgets. Are we a bit Keynesian in spending? And therefore, do you see the fiscal deficit ever dropping down?
Ideally, should not. Now, if you look at the theory, the Keynesian theory,
yes.
Put more money into the system.
Yes.
There's more money in the hands of people.
They
will
invest
and they'll spend.
Absolutely.
It creates a virtuous cycle. The challenge with that is that you put too much money in the system,
inflation.
It goes out of control, inflation.
Right? Yes.
Now, what's the balance is what all governments work. And I think we have done a very good job last 2-3 years, despite the COVID pandemic, despite putting money into the hands of people or through any other infrastructure investments, we have done well. Now, with respect to the investments itself, India is focusing a lot on capital investments.
Hmm.
Even this budget, you would see a thrust on capital investments. And these are tangible results that we're seeing, right? You're seeing new highways, you're seeing airports, you're seeing railways, their infrastructure. When it comes to solar energy, a lot of change is happening on ground.
Right? Yeah.
And that, of course, puts more money in the hands of people. Right? So the focus is more on capital investment.
Okay.
There's a very interesting ratio. There's a ratio which looks at the capital investment in a country to the borrowings. So the question is, how much of the borrowing is going towards capital investments? And if you look at the 24-25 budgets, the capital investment is close to 11 lakh crore. I think the borrowings or the deficit is close to 16 lakh crore.
Okay.
So if you look at the percentage, it's close to 65-70% which is being invested. So you look at it, what am I putting the borrowing to use? I'm putting that to capital investments, which means it will give me benefits in the future, which is much better than using that money and consuming it today.
Yeah.
Right? So I think that's where we have done well.
It's interesting. So, but it's also giving subsidies to the poor, which is also balancing things out.
Subsidies have been a necessity. Mm. For
like the Jan Dhan accounts, only 23% of them are defunct, but that's a subsidy, right? It will come through borrowings, I'm sure.
Think of Jan Dhan as a vehicle. Right? Mm. Basically, it's an account into which you can transfer money. Right? It is to enable the
direct benefits.
Direct benefit, correct. Right, so subsidies is a necessity because
of
the income disparity.
Okay, so would that be, let's now move on to the revenue deficit. I mean, last year it was 2.8% of GDP, and this year it's down, to 2%. So how do you make up that?
So, again, let's go back to what deficits mean.
Yes.
Right? Now, you have fiscal. Fiscal is, like I said, total expenditure minus total revenue. You have something called primary deficit too. Primary deficit is where we exclude the interest portion so that we look at what are we spending on other than interest, right?
Correct.
What is the gap?
Correct.
Now, if you look at revenue expenditure minus tax receipts and revenue receipts, so to say, in financial terms, right? Next 12 months. Again, that gap is reducing. Now, I would, of course, I want to look at the numbers once again. Because the drop is sharp, 5.8 to 5.1.
Yeah.
Something wonderful should have happened, for that 0.7%.
Something
drop.
Must be giving back in terms of the investment.
One number that clearly stands out is the tax receipt. The government expects 11% growth.
Is it
tax
because
receipts.
Of our GST?
GST, one, corporate tax as well. Businesses will do well. Think of it as a function of inflation too, right? The higher the inflation, naturally, if you look at the companies as a whole, right? Think of all companies put together. They should at least be doing as well as inflation, right? So if your inflation is 7%, if you put all the entities together, they should definitely be growing at 7% plus.
Absolutely.
Right? Naturally.
Yes.
Because prices have increased by 7%. So if you look at it from that perspective, the budget and the government's expectation on tax collections should naturally increase by at least 7%. Right? The expectation is 11%, so it's at least, much higher than what the inflationary trends. And of course, inflation is it's under a lot of control now. The expenditure is expected to grow at about 6.5-7%.
Okay.
I'm guessing that this reduction in deficit may be due to increase in revenues. Right?
This revenue deficit, revenue and primary.
But revenue deficit has also dropped.
Yes.
All deficits have dropped.
That's what I see. That's true. Just for the audience, the primary deficit has dropped from 2.3%. To 1.5%, and we have something called non-tax revenue, which is
a small number.
Small drop, 1.3 to 1.2. And but this debt that's dropped also small points again, 58.1 to 57.2.
I hope these numbers play out as anticipated, right?
I hope so too. So, but the bearing on the business is that things are good. The economy is running. People in India are young. So the spending will, the consumption economy will drive this forward.
Yes.
As long as inflation doesn't go over the 7% mark or whatever.
The government is at least confident it will not. The Reserve Bank is also confident it will not. They have managed this very well because inflation has actually dropped last year. I think it's closer to, I think it's 5.9 or 6. Mm-hmm. They have a threshold of 2 to 6% consumer price inflation. It's slightly below 6, so it's within control.
Okay, now let's go to the announcements. They've announced a 1 lakh crore
correct.
Corpus yes. for small businesses, maybe even startups. What do you make of that? I mean, we've always had a 10,000 crore fund of funds, something of that sort. And
I'm not sure. The announcement is one paragraph in the finance minister's speech. It needs to be seen how that corpus gets created because at least I'm not able to see those numbers in the expenditure profile, right?
Yes.
So maybe it is spread across different categories. So it, I'll have to study that a little more. But the 1 lakh crore is to encourage research, encourage innovation.
Yeah, that's what they mentioned.
And not just startups, any business for that matter. Right? Can take benefit. It's a 50-year loan.
Interest-free, they said, or nil.
Low to nil is what they're saying. But, of course, it needs to be seen what that translates to in terms of policy. Right? But it is good, at least they are thinking in that direction. Because traditionally, research and development has been a bane. We don't put in a lot of money in R&D. A lot of businesses and a lot of icons have been saying we need to invest in R&D. We have the advantage of a demographic dividend. But unless we invest in R&D, unless we innovate, unless we truly innovate, I don't mean innovate in the sense that innovation in quotes, right? But it needs to be true innovation. And you need money for that, right? We have a lot of smart people in India.
Yeah.
Money has been a concern. I hope this solves.
No, and you mentioned something very interesting. This is the first time they've used deep tech.
Correct.
They've talked about the circular economy. Does that have a bearing on whether this government, you know, people say that the government has to be progressive and looking at tech. It also looked like a very tech-inclusive budget.
I think that's natural. I think all economies around the world will have to think about it. The deep tech that the finance minister mentioned is in conjunction with also defense. So they will encourage businesses, startups who are in deep tech, for example, quantum security, for example,
yes.
which the defense is using. Right? And there are a lot of other technologies which will be needed for the defense of our country. And the government will encourage.
And the spending on defense is higher, actually.
Higher. It's been stagnant, 4.6, 4.5 lakh crore. It's not changed much.
Okay, it's about 6.7% maybe, no? 6% of GDP.
It's been, I'm not sure.
Okay, we'll put that in the description.
Yes.
Yes.
I don't know what percentage exactly, but the outlay has been more or less stagnant.
Okay, great. I also want to talk about certain things like they obviously you said circular economy. Everybody has to look at climate change in reality. They were not at all populist. This is a journalist in me because I like those terms. They didn't go out and dole out big schemes for farmers it's not a pro-poor budget or whatever. Some of the key highlights for me was they talked about youth and women. Is that an important thing that she said there are 4 new castes?
Correct.
That was funny. Okay, but youth, I thought that would have been table stakes because anyway we're such a youthful country. Again, what my problem is, I mean, looking at education, like you said, the benefits should be in education and healthcare.
Correct. Education, healthcare, research, promoting innovation. Like we discussed, we have the advantage of demography. But we can't waste that.
Right? Yes.
Because I think in the next 10 years, we may lose that advantage.
Yeah, rather than just be a consumption economy,
correct.
We should do this.
We need to invest into the future. And I think the government's focus on capital investment is also an investment into the future.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we also need to look at its impact deeper, right? Upskilling youth, right? Reskilling them. And governments have been, I think state governments, central governments, governments across the world have been stressing on this point. You know, youth, they will have to reskill, upskill themselves. As far as women are concerned, they'll have a much bigger role to play in the economy for sure because there's greater participation in the labor force. So, yes, 2 new castes.
Yeah, but I want to ask you, I mean, do you think instead of doling out free subsidies, like some governments have done in India, giving free tickets, right, that they can take transportation anywhere, they don't have to pay. Is that a good way to motivate?
You'll get me into a lot of trouble.
No, these are just ideas. Yeah, we're not going after it. People take those policies because they have to win elections. Correct. But is it, as a finance expert, right? I mean, would you say that that's a good thing to do?
It certainly causes a lot of stress on the balance sheets, right?
Yes.
Because you need to fund that amount from somewhere. But also from a society's point of view, the question is, what is the government's role? The government's role is to provide a service.
Yes.
Transportation is a service. I'm paying taxes. If I'm not paying income tax, I'm at least paying GST.
Something there.
I'm paying tax. Shouldn't the government's responsibility be to provide me a service?
Yeah, a good service at that.
A good service, right? At affordable rates. Free, I don't know. Maybe free is stretching it. But of course, we may speak from our vantage point. We have a little bit of cash in our pocket.
Yeah.
But there are people who don't, right?
Yeah, that
but
way
they
it's
still
a good
pay
thing,
tax,
yes. Yes. Right? So supporting them is a good thing in
absolutely.
A way also. I think we're following, in a way, Tamil Nadu perfected this model, in the south at least.
Correct.
And I hope it works out. But you're really right. You're saying, let it not hurt the exchequer. You've got to figure out ways to...
We also have to look at other benefits. So, for example, you have women traveling in buses, and they are traveling every weekend.
Yeah.
They are traveling, but they will be going to some place. And they would be spending at that place, which may help the local economy there, right?
Yeah.
Because somebody will travel for a purpose, right? And that may lead to some benefits.
Okay, the only reason I brought out that example is when you're poor as a country, how much of the modern India versus the staggering India? We need to bring, like you said, we need to bring these people into the new middle class. India can create 10 middle classes. I mean, 100 million middle class. Maybe we can add more people every year. Right? Today, what, it's 300 million middle class? Maybe we can add another 100 very soon, or 400 to 500 million, we get there. That's the reason I ask it. Should we be focusing more on innovation and opportunity creation rather than stuff like,
It's a tough question.
Right?
I don't have an answer to that. Now, the question
it's
is...
It's an existential problem in many ways for a lot of governments also.
Maybe.
Right?
Where do you put that money, right? You put money into people's pocket, give them the freedom to spend where they want, right? Do you put money in infrastructure, create employment... Then they have money and then they spend the way they want. Or you provide services.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I mean, if they spent it on healthcare insurance, it's an amazing thing, right? That they have money through these schemes. They have something to actually save maybe.
Correct.
But I've seen the savings rate drop too
in India. Of course, if you look at it traditionally, there has been a drop because people are spending more.
Yes.
They're consuming more.
Because we're younger maybe?
Maybe.
Okay. Pawan, we've talked so much about the macroeconomics and also about the pro-farmers, pro-poor. We've discussed some aspects of that. I literally want to talk to you about now the middle classes on the old regime of taxation versus the new regime of taxation. I'm in the old regime. I still, you know, buy policies and insurance policies too, and then, you know, declare my income to be something and I save X percent based on my investments. What is the new regime versus old regime? Has it impacted our community at all? When I say community, the salaried class.
Let's quickly understand the reason why the new regime was introduced.
Yes, please.
The objective was to wean people away from a system where you have to invest for tax benefits.
Yes.
The more tax benefits you create, the more caveats you create around it, the more complex your tax system becomes. So the philosophy was, can we bring down the benefits that are being offered, but at the same time bring down the rate of tax, which effectively will work out to be same to the government, right? Like I mentioned earlier, we don't have a lot of money to play with. So we can call new regime, old regime, newest regime, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, quickly, when you say we don't have a lot of money to play with, our central bank just doesn't.
Not the central bank. We are looking at the revenues. You know,
and we don't print money, right? Like the U.S., like a lot like the U.S. in terms of spending.
We may not be printing as much, right? But of course, we do print currency. But the thing is, when I say we don't have a lot of money, I mean it in terms of our expenditure versus our revenue.
Okay, good.
Right? So when you look at it from that point of view, you need this revenue.
Okay.
You cannot give away a lot of benefits. You cannot bring down tax rate sharply. So you'll have, it's mathematical jugglery, right? You need to give away something, but you need to also increase your taxes, or you reduce the tax rate but take away the benefits. So the new regime falls under the second category, where you've reduced or you've tried to reduce the tax rates, effective tax rate, but you have withdrawn benefits. What are those benefits? For salaried employees, it could be house rent allowance, leave travel concessions. Earlier, it used to be standard deduction also, but they have reintroduced standard deduction for the new regime. For example, you pay interest on a housing loan on a house that you stay in. Self-occupied property is what we call it. You don't get benefits. Like you mentioned, you used to invest for tax benefits, ATC, ATD, yes. CCD, so on and so forth. Those benefits have been withdrawn. In exchange, what the government has said, I will increase the tax slab, the bands, I'll reduce the tax rates. So now you have tax bands which are 0 to 3, 3 to 6, 6 to 9, 9 to 12. It's an increment of 3 up to 15, and beyond 15, it is 30%. So it's again 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, right? The idea is you reduce the tax rates, but also take the benefits back. Okay. That is the new tax regime. So the question is, what is the tax liability at the end of the day? So more or less, the old and new regime work out a similar number. Like I said, the philosophy being that you don't have space to play around. Now, if you look at the new tax regime, the government has made that the default tax regime. Earlier, it used to be the old, and you switch, you opt in for the new. The government last year made the change saying that the default tax regime would be new unless you decide to move to the old. Now, one of the thought process when the new tax regime was also introduced is some of us were afraid that it may dissuade people from
investing, saving.
There was a real incentive to save now, right? But this is also in line with the overarching trajectory that people are consuming more. They're not saving more. So then can you allow people the freedom to save the way they want or consume the way they want? And you regularize your tax rates, taking away these exemptions, which government believes will simplify the tax law. Right? So that's the basic difference between new and old tax. This year, no change in tax rates. So those two regimes continue.
So in a way, it's not an added increase or anything, but it's still this. But that's left to time. We have to see whether the old regime or new regime will increase.
It depends on the collection. Individual, depends on the income profile. Depends on a lot of questions. And we will know only in July whether the government wants to alter this regime. As of now, there's no change.
Okay. I want to quickly move on to the last 10 years. We've seen 10 budgets, you know, and also we had an election year. But I want to bring in a few thoughts. Let's start off with the Yojanas. The PM Yojanas, there's so many to keep track of.
That's the reason I bought this.
Please. You should tell us some and how have they performed, or what do you think of the impact?
More than performance, I just have a list of some of the Yojanas. You have the Prime Minister Awas Yojana, which is for housing.
And they spoke about housing today. And they said, we need the poor not to live in slums. We don't want to live them in rented shanties or rented chawl, she called it. And I think that's a good move.
And that's where the Awas Yojana comes into play. It gives benefits in terms of subsidies, also low interest rate loans. So that's the Awas Yojana.
For people to build their own homes.
Build their own homes.
Yes, that's interesting. So that's an interesting take on this budget,
I think the original idea was urban housing, but it's also gone into Grameen. So you have the Awas Yojana Grameen. You have the Garib Kalyan Anna Yojana, which is the food subsidy that was introduced during COVID times.
Yes, and the food subsidy has really gone up. And considering COVID. That, we've done really well, because in the COVID 2020, I was just showing the charts, it's gone up. It had shot up in 2020.
That's because the government had to provide food for migrant workers. So they offered 5 kg of wheat, 1 kg of dal, I think.
I want to quickly bring that up. I think...
You see a spike in 2020.
Yeah, in 2020, if you look at it, there's a huge spike in the percentage of food when compared to fertilizer and the interest payouts. Food is quite a lot.
And that is where the Garib Kalyan Anna Yojana comes into play.
And one has to go for the Center for Monitoring the Indian Economy, and you see the food subsidy spike. And we've done really well considering the fact.
Absolutely.
Why is this important, this Garib Yojana?
Oh, it's to give food, you know.
It
will continue, of course. But this year, we have seen a slight reduction in the subsidies. Fertilizer, food, petroleum. A slight reduction, not significant. Again, we have to see, get into the numbers and see. But you will see a small reduction this year. The philosophy also is, can we reduce subsidies and can we put money directly in the hands of people? That is where Jandhan comes into play, DBT comes into play. I will not give you subsidies, but I'll give you enough money and you then spend.
It's interesting. The DBTs have the direct benefit transfer. In the old days, if you looked at it from the 80s to at least 2005, 2006 era, or even the 2010 era, I think once Rajiv, I think I read a quote from Rajiv Gandhi or something. It said,
10 and 1.
On a 15 paisa of the 1 rupee transferred, only 15 paisa reached the beneficiary. And I think that's changed now, thanks to the digital economy, direct transfers.
I hope so. I hope to think that it has changed. Of course, DBT certainly helps.
There's a reason I also say this, because the rural India's daily wages have changed, which is a good thing. It is a slight increase.
It needs to be seen whether that is in real terms or nominal terms.
Right?
Because when it is nominal terms, inflation will push that number up. Right? We'll have to see what is the real growth. I'm sure 10 years is a long period of time.
Yes.
There would be substantial real growth in these 10 years. Time, right?
Interesting. So these yojanas continue to be important for us.
We have yojanas for water, to provide water to rural households. The Fasal Bima Yojana, which is insurance. Gati Shakti, which is to improve connectivity, transportation. A lot of yojanas. There's also an argument that they are previous schemes that have been renamed, rebranded. But the fact is implementation, right? Irrespective of the name, are they being implemented well? At least when it comes to capital investments, capital formation, Gati Shakti, for example, there is a difference in implementation that you see.
Okay, the unemployment rates are about staggering at the same position.
But a very good recovery from the COVID days. Right? You see, COVID unemployment rates have just shot up.
Okay.
From that point onwards, you know, to bring the number back to reasonable again, it's a relative term, but to bring that number back to what it used to be is a good achievement.
And India's share of global total in terms of GDP and exports is also increasing.
It is increasing, yes. It will continue to increase, hopefully.
In what sense? Is it because, again, of the FDI push to bring manufacturing here? Was that what's going to change things?
GDP should increase. I think compared to most of the advanced economies or developing economies, we are a shining star, so to say, because our speed of growth in this year is expected to be close to 7.3. Expected to be 7 next year, too. I don't think so there's any other country of this size that is growing at this pace.
And I was looking at the poverty rates. You know, it's almost like 0% in the urban areas. In the national level, it's still 10. And rural, it's about close to 20.
Yeah, poverty rates have dropped, so that is definitely an achievement. But what has also happened is that the gap between the poor and the rich, the wealth
has increased,
and it's so around the world. India is no exception.
Yeah. I mean, I want to be quickly talking. I don't want to be academic in this. The reason that happens, is it because we are not intervening in terms of healthcare and education opportunities and ensuring that people come to jobs, or is it also because of the reason technology and automation are also making a lot of changes and we have not balanced that out?
Maybe. And also, if you look into the future, who controls technology, right? I think a lot of wealth will automatically flow towards people who control technology. Can you democratize technology at the pace with which it is changing?
Yeah, that's a fantastic, valid point. Yeah,
and the complexity of technology right now, irrespective of how much you skill, upskill, reskill, technology is becoming extremely complex. So the person who controls technology, the people, person, entity, whatever you may call it, naturally will have a lot of wealth flowing towards them.
It's interesting you say this because I was looking at the education numbers on students who can read at the second grade level.
Terrible.
I mean, in India, it's still, I mean, we are Indians, we want our country to grow. And hence, I'm just bringing in these numbers as an ideation, not to say that we're doing bad. We can improve and we can do much better because we are building tech for the world. Why can't we use tech internally?
That's an alarming number because I think we will squander away all the benefits of our demography if we do not get this right.
Only about 40% of the students can read in the fifth grade. Okay, it's an alarming only 40%, and that means of this 40%, not many will, because of the economic conditions, they may not even graduate tenth grade.
And the effect of which you will see in youth unemployment rates.
Yeah,
which is why you would see the youth unemployment rate to be much higher.
Yes, and again, that's a scary thing for me. I don't want to have young people coming and trashing us up. We've seen that in history, right?
People
going to the streets and
compelled
countries.
To do so.
Yeah.
There's no other option.
It's interesting because in the 80s in Andhra Pradesh and Karnataka, there used to be, if you went to college, you had to join political parties. But with the rise of the BPO economy, a lot of people just got jobs and they forgot about being miscreants or being part of an electoral thing. But that's suddenly now coming back to the point that I'm making now. If the youth are not satisfied, It's a strange situation to be in. India is growing. India's brain power is phenomenal for the world.
Yes.
And how do we balance our internal economy when rural kids in the fifth grade, only 40% of them can't read?
Correct.
It's strange. Only 40% can read. Pardon me again. Only 40%. Yeah, 60 can't.
Yeah.
So that's something we got to do.
Definitely. I hope there was allocation, like the way we have set aside 1 lakh crore for innovation. I wish there was something that we set aside for education, right? And we truly invest in education.
Yeah, I hope that happens. And that apart, what else do you think, as an expert for you and as a guy who advises company, what do you see about the last 10 years, Pawan?
Of course, the tangible, the visible changes is infrastructure.
Yes. Right?
I think there's no denying that. The quality of infrastructure is definitely much better, much deeper into India. We are also seeing a lot of infrastructural changes, better airports, or
better roads.
More number of airports,
yes.
I'll say, right, in tier two, tier three. Ports, railways, connectivity has improved for sure, right? Infrastructure, there's no debate, right? We are seeing that. We are also seeing more IITs being created, AIIMS being
IITs,
created, universities
IIMs,
being created. Hopefully,
medical universities.
Universities. Hopefully, that aligns with our vision that there's investment in education, right? Hopefully, this investment could change things at a much deeper level, right? While these are the benefits, right? There are a lot of benefits, infrastructure-wise, capital-wise. But on a personal note, I think at least at the society level, I feel communities are breaking apart.
Yeah, they're key for us.
Maybe they're not as close as they used to be.
Because they're atomized.
Yes. I think there's an undercurrent. I think everyone can sense it.
Yeah.
There's a change in our psyche.
Yeah.
We can all sense it. I don't know if we can express it very clearly. Yeah. There's something significant that's happening as an undercurrent, right? We don't know what direction it will take in the future. We become atomized individuals.
Yes.
So I don't know whether our communities will survive this onslaught.
Right? Yeah. I think then when you look at it as nation, I think we are a community. But you're right. Being atomized necessarily drives entrepreneurship, but not all will succeed. And hence you got to manage it somewhere.
Correct. We are traditionally a community of communities, right? Which become the
traditionally,
country.
Yes.
But at least the bond there was quite strong.
I agree.
Right, and the bond between communities was very strong. I hope that strength continues.
And on the strength of that, actually, you're right. That's why last 10 years, if I see, I've seen new rich being added with startups. They all came from humble families,
that's also
communities.
A community.
Yeah, it's a community now.
Startups
it's
also
a very
are
good
a community,
community. Yes.
Right, business also, if you segregate it, they're also communities. Right, but again. Are those communities contributing to each other's growth?
Yeah, that's right? Important. You grew because of startup economy, right? You set up the firm about 10, 11 years ago, and you benefited through the startup thing. That must have been a significant growth for the last 10 years for you.
Oh, absolutely. We are in Bangalore.
BCL India is in Bangalore, of course.
And a lot of startups. Mm. Many of them have been very, very generous to us. They've supported us during the earlier years. They continue to support us. And that has also brought in a lot of funds whom we work with. So we were working with startups, one community.
Yeah.
Funds used to help them. That's another community. So we got to know them too. So we are true beneficiaries.
So at least it's nice to see governments, regardless of the party in power, right? All of them are looking at startups very seriously.
Absolutely.
And therefore, the last 10 years of the BJP have been about startups.
I think also globally. Countries, I don't know if they're willing to create infrastructure to absorb youth, or for
new
example,
talent,
talent, right? That's a better word. So, creating that infrastructure to absorb talent is not just a cost for the current year, but also cost for the next 10, 20, 30, 50 years, right? Because, you know, what about pensions? It's a continuing cost. Yeah. So, would a government want to take up that responsibility or give that responsibility away to the private sector so they can create jobs, they can consume this talent, and nothing like startups, right? Where
they can absorb the jobs and.
Correct.
And they can innovate.
Absolutely.
Yes,
so if you can fund the innovation, if you can fund the vehicle, I think the vehicle will be able to absorb talent.
Yeah. I mean, global examples, when things were heavily privatized in England, for example, there were riots because pensions were taken away in many places. We saw what happened to the 401k plans in the U.S.
Right.
It's a hard thing to be running a country.
Absolutely.
And I really wish, I think we're close to 100,000 startups now, although registered is very, I mean, the ROC shows about.
I think we are the recognized startups.
Yes. Registered would be how many? 50,000 plus?
Yeah, easily. I think it's close to
75
now. 100,000,
right? I thought it's 100,000.
Yes.
But it's But what is 75 or something that they put out? What is the narrative like? Is it 75 or is it 1 lakh? I like the 1 lakh narrative.
I think it's closer to 1 lakh. I'm sure the number of recognized startups are much, much larger.
You know, there's once Mohandas Pai told me something very interesting. If you want to see a country's growth, see the amount of contribution to EPF. I mean, do you see that growing?
Oh, yes. Very interestingly, this is also a statistic that is used in the economic survey. Any report that the government presents for the last 1 year, when you look at organized or if you look at formal employment, EPF subscription is a proxy. So you see how many people have been added to EPFO, and that's a proxy to say how many people have got added to the formal economy. So yes, certainly. He's right, as he always is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So 10 years has been great for us. I hope it... I mean, a lot of the Western friends that I talk to, they say it's India's decade. There's yes. India as the brain power. I was talking to TDK Ventures, a deep tech fund. They said India is that youth quotient and that brain power for the world. And if we get into manufacturing and obviously software is always here, building generative AI for the world kind of thing. And we have companies raising money on Indian-based large language models. I think it's positive through and through. But you're right, the poverty rates should decline in the rural centers. And obviously, youth need jobs and they need absorption.
Correct.
I keep reading, at least in the tech space, a lot of people are scared today that they lose jobs, especially after you cross 40 or you're new and you've just graduated. It's very difficult. Where is it heading, according to you? I mean, not just jobs, but in terms of being an economy run by strong business fundamentals.
For sure, next 10 years, I'm extremely optimistic. You know that it will be our decade.
You see that with the stock markets.
Stock market, yeah. Yes. You know that is one barometer. But yeah. I am sure that all of us can sense. You know, there's something special that's happening. And the next 10 years, maybe it's also because a lot of old economies are not performing as well.
Yeah. Right? Because they've either aged or there's too much inflation.
We can't discount the fact they're also sitting on a much larger base.
Yes.
So even a small growth means much, much more in their terms. Mm-hmm. We are a smaller base, but we see the benefit of that base. So we'll see a much rapid growth. But I'm certain the next 10 years, you'll see a lot of magic happening.
Quickly, for those people, what do you mean by a smaller base?
Let's look at GDP as a base, right? Now, if you look at the comparisons that we make, if you look at India and if you look at China, let's look at these two numbers. Right? It's 1:7, close to 1:7 ratio. So if China is growing at 4%, that 4% is on a 7x base.
Got it.
Yes. Versus India growing at 7% on X, right? It will take us time, you know, to reach where other economies have reached. But I'm sure these 10 years will be, is where we sprint in the direction, right? Not even walk. We'll be sprinting in these 10 years.
No, it's lovely. Pawan, again, wonderful to have you back for a budget analysis after, 5 years?
I think so,
it's been that long. But for those of you entrepreneurs watching in, BCL India is the startup-friendly finance advisory hub for you. So do visit. I'll put their link in the description. But always a pleasure for you to share that knowledge and unraveling what finance means in terms of running a country. And basically look forward to having another session in
Absolutely.
July, because that's when the real budget gets passed. It's just the interim. You guys have a wonderful year ahead, 2024, and we'll keep you posted about more news. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pawan.